Between the time when wargamers played with chainmail and the rise of the Wizards of the Coast, there was an age of gamers. And unto this, Gygax, destined to bear the crown jewel of TSR upon a troubled brow, to show you all how to roll for initiative.
The Roll for Initiative Podcast, Volume 2, Issue Number 95. This is a wonderful show. We got a lot of emails and voicemails to go over, so we're dedicating the whole show to that. I'm DM Vince, sitting alongside DM Matt.
Hi, everyone.
The injured DM Matt, I should say.
Yes, I'm quite crippled at the moment. I had a freak accident doing dishes while listening to Sod, and I severed the flexor tendon in my right forearm, and I also cut through about 60% of the ulnar nerve in my right forearm. So I'm kind of got a numb pinky, and I'm all bandaged up, but had surgery Friday, and should be good to go in about 6 months on the nerve stuff, about maybe 6 weeks for the tendon.
Look at that. Talk about dedication. On the show, ready to go, answering questions.
Yep. I was even editing last week's show last night. So
left-handed, too.
Yeah.
I don't think that requires the use of a forearm, though.
Wow. But and with a snide comment. And sitting ever so quietly waiting for his turn, DM Nicholas.
Oh, yeah. Hello, everybody, and hell of a crit you took there.
Yeah, I crit fumbled my dishwash check. And apparently my DM was using a fumble chart.
Yeah, he was using the Arduin critical tables.
Yeah.
The Hackmaster chart or something.
Right.
Oh, those are, those are bad too.
Bar glass breaks, severs your tendons in your wrist.
All right, so we're going to start the show off with some quick comment about last show about the there was a post on the forum that Will wanted to cover real quick to clarify something.
Oh, it was nothing big and everything on our show last week and everything. We spoke about the Castle of Inverness, and I think that we had covered a question that someone had sent in concerning the strength of females that play in the game, player characters, not players, but player characters and everything. And then Corpse FX sent in a message on the OSR forums saying that he pretty much agreed, you know, with Vince. Concerned, you know, let it slide and just let the game go and everything. However, I had an issue with it, though. Mm-hmm. He was saying that the rarity of 17 plus strength in general, depending on the roller system, is so rare. Why limit it? Well, I mean, you're playing player characters. They're not supposed to be average characters to begin with and everything. So naturally, they're going to always usually have the above average strengths or intelligence or scores and everything.
At so, least I mean, one stat, right?
Well, I mean, yeah. Like I said, it all depends, though. And like I said, we were speaking about the Arnith Arcana. And if you have a female fighter, you can roll, I guess it's 8 6-siders for strength.
Yeah, with you know the, was it about? Method 5, I think, in the Arnith Arcana?
Yeah, exactly. So if she gets an 18, and if you allow it, that's great. I don't think it's an issue of rarity and anything. The fact is, you're playing player characters. They are going to have, you know, higher scores to include strength. Now, another comment says, let there be freaks. Now, just because a female player character has a strength of 18 doesn't make her a freak. Now, you know, because you did make the exception there where, you know, there could be exception to rules concerning the build, the bone structure, height, development. It could be, a racial feature where women are generally stronger in that region, or area where they come from. I mean, think of Amazons, for example.
Good example.
I mean, Amazons, you would think, have to be strong. I mean, they're not going to survive in the jungles, having to fight off all those crazy creatures that, you know, to survive and everything. So I would think that a 16, a 17, maybe an 18 might be in the norm there somewhere along the way. So I don't would consider them a freak. So you change the whole thing and, you know, saying that, you know, there's an issue. They wouldn't be freaks. Consider them normal women who are just typically strong because of where they live at environmentally. They just, you know, they, what do you call it? I'm thinking of Darwin. They evolved to be much more stronger.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
That's how I look at that and everything. So I just wanted to comment on the message by Corpse FX on that. You know, for those people that allow 18 or higher strength for, you know, female characters, I think it's a good idea. But I wouldn't consider them freaks because now we're putting them in that stereotype side of the house again. They're not freaks.
I think basically his whole thing was, it's just a game. Who really cares is what he's pretty much saying.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's really my opinion. If I was getting ready to play a game and someone wanted to play a female but wanted a high strength, I'd probably say, sure, why not? It's one of those, it's in the book. Yeah, I'll go by the book, but if someone says they'd rather not, I'll let them. I really don't care. Yeah. It's not that big of a deal, really.
Yeah, it's not going to, like, the whole system's going to come crashing down and your whole world's going to explode or anything like that.
Yeah, it's not like they want to switch out the D20 for a D30.
No!
It's not like cats and dogs living together.
Yeah. Well, see, the funny thing is,
Pepsi. Oh, no.
Orcs and kobolds.
I just wanted to stress one other thing, though. If a female character finds a gauntlet of ogre strength or ogre power, whatever there are, and she goes to 18, it's 18-100, I believe, right?
Yeah, 18-00. Yeah.
18-00. They're not going to blow up with muscles. I just want people to understand that.
No. Right, because that's a magical enhancement.
It's a magical enhancement. No, someone asked me a PM on this. It's like, well, if they put on a girdle of fire giant strength, how in the world do they get around with the muscles? I said, what are you talking about?
What?
And they was under the assumption that if they put the girdle of fire giant strength on, that they would blow up. You know, they get muscles like Popeye. Yeah.
They don't go all Incredible Hulk. Their shirts don't bulge off and run around in purple pants when they put the girdle on. It's magic.
It's kind of cool, though.
Just making sure people understand that.
Now, if you
wanted
to make
the charisma of the character.
Yeah. Now, if you wanted to make a potion of giant strength that did that, sure, it sounds fun. Girdle, not so much.
Well, you better include that their armor and everything will grow with them and everything.
Oh, no, I want that to burst.
Well, if they're in chainmail, believe me, they're going to get squashed.
Yeah.
Well, that's the exception, like you were saying.
Right.
Yeah, that would be an exception.
Because that's a magical enhancement. You know, that's...
No, whatever. Sounds like a plan.
Okay.
If you want to join in the fun, osrgaming.org is the forums to be and the only place to be. Where you want to discuss the show. That's where we all hang out, all the podcasts. You'll find all of us, even Nick, who is posting more now. I almost passed out with the amount of posts Nick had posted. So
I know, it's kind of freaky, isn't it? I'll stop it.
What's the update on your game, by the way?
Actually, we just had game session number 2 yesterday afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And I did post on the OSR Gaming forums the previous... was it 2 weeks ago when we first started the campaign? Mm-hmm. So the first part is up there, and I hope to have part number 2 probably either later on tonight, sometime this week. So it's coming along really well. We got a total of 6 players right now, and they're really enjoying it. Kids are having a blast. So
is Blackstone in your group?
No, I'm afraid not. He's over in his keep out in the hinterlands.
Oh, okay.
Sorry about that.
OSRGaming.org, the forums, is a review section of campaigns. You can go there and read the various campaigns that are going on. I know DM Kojo had one going on. Nick has his going on. I think Thorky's been posting up his Saturday night one that he's been playing in. There's a bunch of them that you can read. And there was one about Axe, too. That system, Axe system? I can't think of that. AKA Adventure Conqueror King, whatever. I can't think of
it. Okay.
I apologize to that player that's put that up there. He has it up there. RFIstaff@gmail.com is the email address, which we have tons of emails today. And we have 2 voicemails. 570-865-4210 is the hotline. And I guess we'll just jump right into the show with the voicemail. And here's the first one.
Hi, this is Brian calling in from St. Louis. I had sent you guys a notice via your website, a longtime listener for the podcast, and really appreciate what you guys are doing for the OSR community. But I know a lot of times for Kickstarter, people focus on all the miniatures and a lot of the board games that are coming up. But I want to let you guys know about one of the original artists for TSR from back in the day, Jeff D, is recreating some of his work as he gets backing for it. The as of today on, let me see here, the 28th, or nope, sorry. Sorry about this. the 28th of September. He's got 9 days to go. The program is already funded, but his stretch goals are pretty cool. He's going to be doing some of the original recreations of Hogrick, the bugbear god of battle, Deep Salacious, the aquatic elf god of knowledge, Skirrit, the centaur god of the forest, Yulandella, the howling goddess of protection, and some others, including the one that just got funded in a stretch goal is his original drawing of Loth, the demon queen of spiders. You can find him on the Kickstarter's page. The $25 range is a fantastic place to get in if you just want to get a couple of prints. There is a $25 backer area where you get the postcard of all four recreated non-human deity drawings and the unlocked stretch goal non-human deity non-human deities. So the delivery is estimated in November of this year. So if you guys, I know you come out weekly and you might not get to this email, but hopefully you will. If you could announce it on your show, it would be great for the OSR community because this guy's art is definitely one of the things I remember from playing back in the day. So again, thanks for the show, and I'll talk to you guys later.
All right, cool. Thank you for letting us know.
Yeah, I saw that I'm actually a Facebook friend with Jeff D, and he's been going like gangbusters trying to recreate a lot of his stuff from the back in the TSR days when he was there for a few years. And I know he's doing deities and demigods, and I think he did Fiend Folio, not Fiend Folio, but Rogues Gallery, when he did a lot of his stuff for the Rogues Gallery, too. He recreated a lot of that, and the basic and expert rules, the Moldvay rules, mm-hmm. He recreated a lot of that stuff, too.
Well, my question,
I guess a lot of it was lost, I guess.
How is it lost?
I don't know.
Well, between moving offices and the company transfers and...
You would think an artist would keep his portfolio.
Well, I think what happens, that once they do the... They did the artwork for TSR, once they were... See, him, D, and I think Larry Elmore and so on, when they... A lot of their artwork, when they worked at TSR, it became property of TSR. It wasn't theirs.
Yeah.
So he wasn't freelancing, so... Whatever happened to artwork, Matt was saying,
it could be in like an archive that like at Watsy somewhere in a box that they don't even know about. It's it's just like at a Mad Magazine in their headquarters. For the longest time, they had this artwork just hanging up on the walls, and in their foyer, and in some of their old covers, it was the original artwork. Just and Time Warner didn't even know.
Nice.
They thought they were like prints, and then eventually Time Warner figured it out and started selling it.
Does Jeff D have the right to sell the artwork that's TSR's property?
Well, he's recreating. He's drawing the stuff again, so it's not going to be an exact duplicate. It's going to be inspired by a homage to his own work.
So he's using that 10% roll type thing?
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm thinking.
Yeah, that's what I'm kind of thinking, too.
I hope he doesn't get nailed by Wizards of the Coast by it. You know how particular they are with things.
Well, the Watsy Nazis haven't come by him yet, so...
Right.
He's already done he's already done recreations, like I said, for when he did his stuff for Moldavay Basic and Expert, and right. I believe that went without a hitch, and he did Rogues Gallery, yeah, too. So.
Because it's the only thing that could is if, like, maybe a Lolth or something that's, like, IP, and he draws that, because I've heard of comic book artists at conventions, like, they'll be, like, drawing, like, a Superman or a Batman when they're at that time not actually working for the big two, and then the DC or Marvel people come over and be like, please don't draw that anymore for sketches or whatever. And at which point they stop. At no point have I ever actually seen it come down to like lawsuits or something. It would just be, please don't do that. And even then it would have to be something they actually have the intellectual property of, not just, hey, this artwork is similar to this other artwork, because that happens all the time.
Okay. Well, there you go. If you want to check it out, go to Kickstarter.com and type in Jeff D's name and it should come up. Matt, if you could try to find a link.
Yeah, I have the link. The Kickstarter is actually over. It is it must have ended like yesterday or something. It's because it says 0 seconds to go.
Well, the dude said we had 9 days left on the 28th and it's the 30th.
The thing I'm looking at says it's funded. He had raised like $3,100 out of 2,000 with 76 backers, and it says 0 seconds to go.
Maybe he's looking at a different link. I don't know. If he, I'll write him. He wrote an email also, so I'll write him an email and ask him where the exact link is.
Right. Yeah. Because the one I'll post the link to the one I found. It was like recreating my artwork from original Dungeons and Dragons. So unless he has multiples.
He might have done different Kickstarters for different projects.
He does have multiples. He does have multiples.
All right. Okay.
He's got one right now where he's recreating the non-human art from deities and demigods. It's got 7 days to go. 373% funded already.
All right. Then that's the one we're looking for, Matt. If you just pass that link to Matt later on, we can put it in the chat.
Jeez, Matt. Producer Matt, get with it, buddy.
No,
that's what I get.
Just
for
because you almost severed your hand doesn't mean you can slack off.
That, and I'm taking some nice drugs at the moment. I mean, I'm just hydrocodone.
And
some
you're
insidious.
Not sharing. What
right. I would fail wellness.
Yeah, definitely. You'd be kicked out of the WWE real quick. Anyway, let's listen to our second voicemail and last voicemail.
Hello, my friendly neighborhood initiative rollers. This is DM Kojo. Calling to talk about multi-class characters. I have never allowed multi-class player characters in any of my games, either now or way back in the day. Always thought they messed with the game balance. I don't like the idea of a fighter magic user being able to wield a sword. I mean, yes, I know it's like Gandalf, but still. Not really been my thing. I do use them as NPCs from time to time, but I still prefer to use single class characters as NPCs more often. Just getting your thoughts on multi-classing. Do you allow it? How freely do you allow it? And what are some ways to maybe keep it from throwing off the game balance if too many people want to be multi-class in your party? Great. Keep up the good work. Thanks, guys.
Well, multi-classing issues.
I never had a problem.
No.
Neither have I.
Well, I'm going to tell you why I never have a problem. That's why you have level limits on demi-humans.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm telling you right now, that solves your problem. That solves your problem. I mean, right there, just keep the level limits in place if you allow multi-class characters. Multi-class characters can only level up so high. Yep. And in another stance, they're hurting themselves experience-wise, because whether they have two classes or three classes, their experience points is divided by the number of classes they have.
And
under
hit
belt.
Points, too. They take the average.
Yeah, and it stinks.
Yep.
So in the long run, are they more powerful? No, they're not.
No.
I mean, it's nice to have, like, one just to be, like, the utility person, that fire mage thief that can do a little of everything, but they're going to end up lagging behind the rest of the group when it comes to level.
Right, especially when you're talking, like, larger groups.
Right. It's like when I would play the old SSI gold box games, I would always have one fighter mage thief because anything more than that made zero sense from a party standpoint. Because you advance so slow when you multi-class three classes, it's not worth it. You're actually, if you had an entire party of that, be prepared to run a ton of first level adventures.
Right.
Because you're going to spend three times as the length at first level than you would if you weren't a multi-class right. character.
Now, I see the advantage of having multi-class characters, like I was saying, in a small group. If you only got a group of four or five players, I could see maybe having a good majority of the group have multi-class. I give a good example, just the group I got right now. When we first started out, there was really only four players for this one group I'm running with the kids here.
Mm-hmm.
Got a ranger cleric, got a fighter magic user, got a gnome illusionist thief, and the third and the fourth one was a human ranger. So
I don't like multi-classing either.
You don't like multi? I don't see a problem with it. It's been a part of the game from the beginning, and I don't see how multi-classing throws it off as far as game balance.
I just don't like it. I don't care if people do it. I just don't like it myself for me as a player.
Oh, okay.
I don't do it. I'm more of a purist. If I'm a fighter, I'm a fighter. If I'm a magic user, I'm a magic user. Stick with it. Don't, whine out and play another class.
Right. I in my personal preference, too, I like to play a single class character. But, I mean, I won't if the party needs a certain class because, we're short on this and this. Yeah, I'll play a multi-class, like a half elf, ranger cleric or something like that.
I don't understand people that play multi-class at first level when you're level one, this level one. It's like you're really screwing yourself by doing that.
Yeah, you're screwing yourself on the XP and on the hit points.
Yeah. In this new campaign I just started yesterday, finally, a face-to-face first edition game.
Yay!
I'm playing the magic user because I'm the most experienced person in the group, but I only have 2 hit points.
Ugh.
Yeah. He wouldn't let us do max hit points at first level. He wanted us to roll.
Oh, no way.
And our tank? Get this, our tank only has 4 hit points.
Oh, man. Really? Oh, I'm merciful in that respect that I have everybody start off with maximum hit points.
Yeah, me too. The first edition game I just started, I went max because I'm like, this is going to be lethal enough as it is. Mm-hmm. I don't need to nickel and dime you at the very beginning.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Now, I tell you, if we talk, since we're on the subject of multi-class, I like to dual class from time to time.
Oh, play a human, then dual class?
Yes, I like doing that because what I normally like to do is I'll take a cleric, mm-hmm. and I'll run a cleric for like maybe 3 or 4 levels, and then dual class to fighter.
I don't see anything wrong with that. No. I mean,
because I'll always have those priestly abilities, so those clerical spells.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't see anything wrong with that. Dual questing is fine because it's not that much of a headache. On a player, that is.
Yeah, but I like multi-class and I like the diversity. But again, that's the purpose of having, level limitations. And that's something we should have covered last week when we talked about the level limits when that came up. But the level limits, if you have unlimited level limits, those characters will get too powerful. Then again, I can see the game balance being ruined then. If you have a level 14, 40 fighter cleric thief in the party.
Well, I think one of his questions was, how do you prevent it? Was one of, just don't let the players do it. That's how you prevent it.
Yeah, you could do that too. But if you tell them level limits, they ain't gonna like that.
Stick with the level limits, like Will says, and then you can do it.
Yeah.
But if I don't understand, because he said he uses it as an NPC, so how is that really fair to the players?
Right.
I mean, it's not all about fairness and balance and being, fourth edition here, but I don't know. Either pick one side or the other. That's all I have to say. Right?
Yeah.
Right. Right. There. Right.
Enough said.
Okay.
Let's get on to our emails because we have way many of them. The first
we have a plethora.
the first one, I'll read the first one. It basically comes from David S. He writes in saying that his father got him into D&D when he was 7. He's been playing ever since. He started DMing his own campaign with his dad and his original group from the 80s when he was 15. Cool. When he turned, he's 23 now, and he still prefers first and second edition, basically because that's what he was raised on. He has played third and 3.5, and he won't touch fourth. Anywho, we want to let us know that this is one of his most favorite podcasts. Keep up the good work. Long live Thacko.
Long live the Thacko.
What's... That is a curse word. You should bleep that out. Bleep.
I don't even know how to pronounce that. Is that Thack Zero or
Thack? I think that's a zero. So yeah, Thack Zero.
I don't even know what that is. What is that?
Remember back when we talked about Thacko and Thack Zero and how Thacko actually didn't exist and because of the duplicate 20s on the chart?
Yeah.
So basically, he's asking something to live long that actually doesn't exist.
Yeah, I still stand by with Jason. What is that? I have no idea.
I thought I threw a book in the trash can away that had something in there. Can't remember.
And Dave, we're just messing with you.
Yeah, we just
so don't get offended.
No. Yeah, we appreciate the kind words.
I wrote him back for this email and I gave him the addresses for Thacko's Hammer and Save or Die. So we had more things to listen to help him in his gaming love.
It's the whole gaming experience.
Yeah. So the next one comes from John Keefe, who wrote in. I guess that's Keefe or Keefe.
I think it'd be Keefe.
He's actually a Mayfair freelancer. He wrote us in and talked about back in the day about how he actually was responsible for the Holy Sword of Griswold. Not Griswold.
I guess I love my ketchup reference.
Yeah, he did like the ketchup.
Yeah.
He did write most of this, and he said it was a great show. Hope you don't take it as an insult, but I say the show is like NPR's Car Talk, only better. I've never heard that.
What is Car Talk? I have no clue what that is.
NPR's Car Talk.
I've never listened, but I think it's kind of like two guys chatting cars, and they're like entertaining.
Oh, I was thinking of cars and their horns when they communicate. Beep, honk.
Oh, you were thinking Disney cars.
Wait a minute. You use entertaining and NPR in the same sentence. I didn't think that was possible.
Wow. Anyway, I had my copy of Undead with me to follow along with your discussion. I really liked the way you trashed the Holy Sword of Griswold.
You're welcome.
And I love dwarf paladins and pig orcs.
We're still on pig orcs. Good lord.
That's going to haunt us. We had issues with a bunch of the editing. I can't find all the original submissions, so I don't know if the Holy Sword of Griswold was written the way it appeared in the module. I guess after reading this email and talking to him back and forth, Mayfair changed a lot of things on him.
Really? Yeah.
They must have done it with a lot of freelancers.
Wow.
Yeah, well, that's what it is. You know, if you are a freelancer, you're going to submit it under the supposition that they're going to use it. But if they decide there's something, it's got to fit within the criteria of what they're putting in the product.
Yeah.
Right. I think the idea of the sword was that the holy water was supposed to be released from the hilt on the blade and cause the extra damage, either with a hit or a spray when it flew off the weapon when it swung. The uses per day is kind of silly, but you would have to reload it. It should have been two uses until you had to reach into your bag of holding to get more holy water. With the ketchup thing, I get the picture of the plastic hilt when you squeeze it and it squirts out on the blade. I don't know if there's another description of the sword and its powers. I do know that there's another description of the sword and its powers on page 69. I didn't realize there was. Did you guys notice it at all?
No.
Everything on that page starts with the trap closes section was not written by us. Oh.
Huh.
The sword description on page 69 is easily worth 20,000 gold pieces. Probably a million.
I love that. It's like, easily worth 20,000 gold.
It reminds
probably a million. Okay.
It reminds me of Sauron smiting, not really, but close, all of his enemies at the start of the Lord of the Rings movie. Plot device, if wielded in the final scenario, would have been seen and recognized by the dwarf slaves nearby, and the charm would be released. Then they would join the adventurers. All right, let's see. Going on. I did almost all the names in the booklet. I hated doing names, so who knows if it was based on Clark Griswold, the sword he's talking about.
Yeah.
There is a section in the real adventure where the offspring of the Nightbay are encountered. I just wanted to answer some of the questions you brought up. The Bizantra is pronounced B-I-Zantra. Remember that weird dwarf-like? It looks cooler without the eye and more dwarf-like. Neither myself or Laurel, which happens to be the person who wrote with him, have any military training, but we didn't write the tactics for the Undead Legions. I think that was thrown in by Corey Glaberson. I wanted to flail him with a Byzantra Lasher for changing my final encounter scenario. You're right about the one-armed Byzantra drawing. It doesn't look like a dwarf at all. I told you.
Okay.
Maybe it was originally a drawing of the lead NPC Fallon. He had one arm. Ha. Huh? And Mayfair said they wanted a Byzantra, so the artist changed it. Hmm. If he were a dwarf, they could have shown it frontally because he was gut wolf covered his back.
Oh, my goodness.
They were such prudes that they changed one of our monsters, a vicious form of ash tree, from ash kicker to ash quaker.
Oh, okay.
Keep up the good work, and I'll have to tell Laura to give it a listen. That's from John.
You know, it's funny that he brings up all this, how prudish they were at Mayfair, but yet during the day, they were like, oh, like, we're the other game company that produces AD&D stuff. We're that cool and everything. But they were a bunch of prudes.
Yeah, apparently.
The irony.
Okay, so next email.
Okay. And this email is from Turco. Hey, guys, I noticed you recently been doing shows about gaming systems contemporary to AD&D, such as Dragon's Quest and Talislantia. If you're taking requests, I'd really like to hear your take on TSR's Conan RPG system.
No.
Retro cloned as Zephyrus.
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 Or, you know, it's called that, right?
No.
It's called the Zeb Cook fantasy roleplay system.
Oh, okay.
The Z-E-F-R-S.
Ah.
Yeah.
Oh, did not know that.
Yeah.
I really love the system, though I haven't had much chance to play it, and there is not much info out there about it. It'd be cool to hear why you guys think it didn't seem to take off back in the day, and maybe tips on how to do conversions of D&D modules into Conan Zeb Cook fantasy role-playing system. I've tried to do some conversions myself. I don't have any problems with the monsters' encounters, but I'm not really sure what to do about the magic, since there is far more magic in D&D than there is in Conan Zeb Cook fantasy role-playing system. Any info, tips, helps, opinions, or reviews on this awesome system would be greatly appreciated. Keep up the good work.
Well, I've never played the system. I stood away. I thought you had to be Conan to play the system.
Yeah,
I'm not familiar with it either.
I
do vaguely remember it coming out in the mid-80s. Thing I recall is I remembered the Conan modules for AD&D and how craptacular they were. But I don't know anything about the Conan role-playing game system or anything about it. I mean,
if you do a quick search on Zephyrus, Z-E-F-R-S, there's actually a whole website that is like an SRD type thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's free. It looks like Zeb Cook just like took all the Conan stuff out and just left the basic bone system up. So if you want to read about it.
Oh, okay.
And maybe Matt can throw up the link for that if he finds it before the end of the show.
Can do that.
But I was reading through most of it. It looks pretty interesting, but I don't know. We'd have to actually like pull it apart and read it. So.
Yeah, we'd all have to take a look at it. I mean, it's a possibility. We might talk about it. Who knows? Try to dig up some more information on it.
Yeah. How about you, Will? Have you heard
anything? Well, I am familiar with it, but I did not play it at the time because D&D was on my, you know.
It was on the radar. Yeah.
It definitely was. Now, I will tell you what I do know about it is that it basically is a clone. It's a clone.
Of what system? Okay?
Of the Conan system.
Of the Conan system. Now, this is what the deal is with this system, though. Conan is really not part of this system because that was still IP protected. So I don't think there was Conan in there. The very explicit Conan property is not in this system.
For the what? For the actual Conan TSR?
For the Zeb Fantasy role-playing system. And I think it's based on the setting and there's mentions, but I don't think any of the whole Conan's, you know, the properties within the system.
It was ripped out. Yeah, it was stripped out.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think that's what the deal is with this one. That's why I didn't really care too much about it.
Okay.
All right. Well, we'll go to the next email. We'll thank you for writing in. We'll have to actually put that on a list and see if we can take a look at that.
Okay. Well, our next email is from Benjamin W. And Benjamin says, first, let me start out by saying that you guys are awesome. Well, thanks. I liked Jason, but Will is a perfect replacement. So kudos to Will there. Yay.
Perfect. I like the word perfect.
There you go. So you get 50 experience points. Anyway, I just finished listening to issue 91, and someone wrote in about a black dragon egg. Remember that one, guys?
Yeah.
This is funny because a party I was in once captured a red dragon egg and end up cooking and eating it. Okay.
Yep. That's awesome. That is
That'd
awesome.
Be one heck of an omelet.
Yummy.
Mmm, spicy. It's red dragon, you know.
Oh, yeah, true. So,
you're also talking about how WotC was thinking about putting up their books in electronic format. I'm an avid Magic the Gathering player and love WotC for that, but when it comes to D&D, I could care less about their piracy problem. Thanks for entertaining me. Yeah, I'm not sure when that's supposed to happen. Is it later this year or next year? They're supposed to put things back out in electronic format.
I don't know if they ever really announced a hard date. I would suspect.
Yeah, I know they announced it at Gen Con, but right. No hard date yet.
Right. I would suspect it would be next year before we really see anything, because right now we're in that wacky lame duck period of fourth mm-hmm. edition. So they're still kind of releasing stuff for fourth at the same time when everyone knows it's not going to be around. So.
Oh, yeah. I don't know about that now. I don't think anything's been released. The gaming store got their last product. They're not getting nothing.
Oh, okay.
The distributors they're not getting nothing for fourth.
Wow.
Huh.
I think fourth's last product came out about a month ago.
Okay.
Okay. So as far as the electronic format, again, we were speculating on, you know, is it a retooling? Are they having a specific format for their stuff, like something just for the Kindle and put in on one of those ebook readers? I mean, who knows? I mean, that would be the only thing I could think of that they would have an ebook format. Or it might be why it's taken so long is they're taking everything from their back catalog up into fourth edition and putting it in an ebook format. So that might be the reason why.
Well, the thing with that is you don't have to do it all at once. You would be best, instead of dumping it all at once, unless you're doing some sort of subscription all you can eat model. But where if it's actually buy it, you trickle that stuff out over time. Right. It's probably more, I'm guessing, of they have the digital initiative. They know they want to do it, but okay, how do we sell this to the people that pulled their stuff in the first place that people had bought on DriveThruRPG when a few printer proofs got leaked out for 4th edition? Those proofs that got leaked to 4th edition before 4th edition was out were the copies that would have been sent to the printer. Whoa. It wasn't your general gamer. That was like an inside job. Not necessarily WotC. Could anywhere through that chain of sending that PDF from WotC to the place, I would guess, in China that was printing it. And that's when they threw a fit, when 4th got leaked early, and they pulled all their stuff.
Oh, okay.
And that was an inside job. So that's why it's always baffled me. Why did you pull that and say piracy was the concern, when in reality what you're mad about is printer's proofs being leaked?
Mm. I don't know. I look at it like this, though. Piracy is wrong. It's illegal. You're stealing someone else's work. Just don't do it. That's my whole point of the whole issue with that stuff and everything. What? You know, I don't care how they release it. I hope they don't release it in a Kindle format. I don't have a Kindle. I don't like Kindles. I don't like all electronic stuff. I tell you what I really like to see. If it came out in a PDF format or print on demand.
Print on demand would be good.
Right. I think print on demand would make the most sense because people are going to want their physical copies.
Yeah.
They want a physical copy, and that's the whole point. But to release it all at once, that would be extremely foolish of them financially, logistically, physically. Right. That would be a serious mistake. They have to get a feel for the market. And I think that the litmus test right now was the D&D reprints. And the now, with the 3.5 reprints already came out about a week or so ago. And now the Unearthed Arcanus coming out next year.
Right.
So I think that's going to be the litmus test. Exactly. What is the fear? What is it? What is the take on the market out there? Are people going to bite on this?
Yeah.
So I was in my group yesterday, and one of the players had the new reprint of AD&D, the Player's Handbook, and I immediately looked at the book and I was like, "What's wrong with this book?"
Yeah.
I noticed that everything's a lot larger too in the font. Did you guys notice that as well, looking it over compared to like an original book?
Yeah, well, you know what it is? It's all us old people that have glasses and contacts. Oh. You know, it's one of those things. Now, did you also? It should have came with one of those built-in light bulb things that pop out and have a light bulb over too.
Well, that's not what I'm getting at. I looked at it, I said, "What is wrong with this book?" Because I was trying to figure it out before I knew I was looking at a reprint. Okay.
I haven't actually looked inside the reprints. Is the margin smaller?
I don't know.
Because I know that the paper is a different type of mill quality, and it's a little bit brighter paper.
Right. So it's
shiny or something.
Yeah, it's probably a higher
apparently
quality.
Apparently, it has to do with the – someone I was reading somewhere that it has to do with there's a certain amount of clay that goes into the actual paper. And the, I guess this one has a slightly higher clay content.
Right.
So it'll actually last longer. It's not as pulpy. I guess.
Right. And I don't think they had the exact font either that they used back in that day. I think that font is non-existent now.
Yeah. It might have been, which is weird because, I mean, who originally printed them? Random House, who was like, you know, the biggest publisher on the, in the, you know, solar system.
Watch it be some, like, Random House
proprietary
font, and that they couldn't actually use it, so they had to make, like, the knockoff.
Yeah.
It
looks like Arial font to me.
When it sat next to my book, my revised player's book that I brought to the group, I was just like looking at it. I'm like, ugh. And he's like, okay, I'll just like throw some tea on it or something. Maybe it'll just make it look better. But no, even if he aged the book, it still looked really weird to me compared to the book I had.
I like them. I got them right here. I like them.
Yeah. I actually saw a set at Half Price Books for $25 a book.
With the reprints?
Yeah.
Already?
Wow. Yeah. I was amazed.
Someone bought a reprint to sell the Half Price books. That was dumb.
Right. Yeah. They brought it was like they had the Monster Manual, DMG, and Player's Handbook. They wanted 25 each.
That's like $10 off a book.
Right. Well, the DMG, that's not a bad price. The other ones you could find like on Amazon for that 25. But just the fact that how much they probably actually sold them to Half Price was what's baffling to me.
They probably need the gas money.
Yeah, they probably got like $15 or something.
Typical gamer, what am I going to do, eat or buy these books?
I was there the other day, some dude was handing all of his books, and they were role-playing books. Nothing I was interested in, it was Palladium stuff.
Yeah.
Nothing that was interesting, it was Palladium stuff.
I don't mean to sell Palladium, but I love Palladium too. Not. He had a crate full of them. Like a crate full of books. It must have been like 20 books in there. Yeah. The guy comes to the counter. They gave him $5 for the crate.
Yeah.
What?
Yep. What? And she's like, well, I have to consider the amount of books that we have already and if people buy them and if it appeals to my customer. And then we have to like make a profit off of them. The guy's like, whatever. Just give me the $5.
Right. Because what they sell it for, they paid maybe 30% for.
Yeah.
I mean, so a lot of those Palladium books, they only sell for $6 because they have that low cover price to begin with,
right,
since they're all perfect bound.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
So at that point, if they're buying it, they're probably paying like 30 cents a book.
Yeah, but $5, dude, that's like insulting.
Right. Oh, well, people do it. I have a friend who works at a Half Price Books in Columbus, and she's a buyer, and you should be amazed at some of the stuff that they have people sell. Like a first edition printing of a little book called Lord of the Rings, The Hobbit.
Yeah.
Someone sold that to them and got nothing for it because the buyer was an idiot and thought it was trash. And it ended up in their dumpster.
What?
And someone happened to notice it in their, one of the employees noticed it in their dumpster and was like, who threw this, a first printing of The Hobbit, in the dumpster? Just because it had some, a rip binding.
Ow.
It was like the spine had like a rip in it. But it was still, the pages were intact, it wasn't falling apart or anything.
Well, they have no concept of prices there. Like, I saw the Star Wars, Saga Edition core book there for $75. in the protected case. And meanwhile, another store I saw it for $5.
Right. It just depends.
Who's running that place? Kender and Gully Doors?
I don't know. Here's what you do. Every store is different. Every store actually has a personality, and you have to kind of take the time to figure out.
Yes.
What I've discovered is the two stores that have the best selection of stuff in, like, the Cincinnati area are actually in Florence, Kentucky, and Beaver Creek, which are actually, like, 45 minutes away from me in both directions, in north and south. The farther away from, like, the city proper, the better their RPG selection. But for pricing-wise, I've noticed one store will put their old Dragon magazines in the collectible section. Another store will put them with the regular magazines. You just kind of have to go to the store enough to figure out where they put their stuff and if they're going to overcharge for it.
Here's a perfect example of what I found at the same half price. You know I don't know if you're familiar with second edition, but you know the starter kit that they came out with second edition, the box set?
Yeah.
That was at the half price books for $35 in the shell, hidden shelf, and it was missing. I think it had some scratches on the CDs.
Yeah.
That's all it was missing. And I think it's more than that. It's probably like $100 on Amazon.
Actually, I saw a set on eBay going for like $40 with the expansion and the 2.0. Yeah. Like the ones on Amazon are at that $100 and they just stay there for people that'll buy it. But if you really check eBay, you can find some reasonable prices on them, actually.
All right. Well, we went on tangents here. So
yeah.
Email number 5. Go ahead, Will.
Let's see here. Email number 5 is from Tim. Oh, this is the guy I like. Thanks for covering my pig-headed orc question with such enthusiasm. I just listened to your Taz Lanza show. I played the poo out of this game back in the day and still have my first edition book. Well, that sounds pretty good. Yeah. I think its strangeness is off-putting, but for me, that was also the appeal. The combat goes faster than D&D and is very deadly. So much so that I found myself putting an extra point into my speed characteristic during character creation because you really want to run away from a lot of the monsters. If you guys decided to look at it further, I would recommend looking at the World Guide, which is also on the Tazlanta website. The setting is unique. Believe me, it is unique. I would say to anyone looking for a good RPG that is not a cookie-cutter fantasy game, Tazlanta is your game. And it's free at Tazlanta.com. Huh?
Did he get paid to advertise that email?
I was just going to say, he sounds like that guy that does the that insurance commercial.
Yeah.
The one that says the insurance in your hand or whatever. Are you in good hands? Yeah. You guys do an awesome job. Keep it up. Yes, I will, Tim. Thank you for your pig orcs question.
Pigs with orc faces?
Yes.
Pigs with orc faces. Yeah, I can't believe
faces.
I did that.
Yes.
Pigs with orc faces. I'll never forget that.
That's an outtake that'll last for a lifetime. All right, cool. Thank you, Tim. Email number 6 comes from Greg B. Greg Brady? Oh, sorry. Thanks for the great show.
It's Greg Brady.
Oh, man, he's going to get mad now.
I know. I'm sorry, Greg. I put the B in there. Thanks for the great show. I really enjoyed listening to it. I'm sure you're aware of the UA reprints announcements by now. What do you think? What do you guys think? Yeah, real quick. Yes, good, bad?
Yeah, why not? Yeah. Seems like a logical progressor.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I think that at this point they're just trying to test the waters and see what they can get out on the supplement in and actually make money off of.
Yeah,
I'm pleased.
I think it's cool and the most logical way for Wizards to go, as UA was the optional rules for people. Yeah, I agree with him. Mm-hmm. My main question for you fine folks is, where? If my character casts protection from evil, will that prevent golems from entering the area? Thanks for the show.
From golem or golems?
Golem, not golem, sorry.
Golem.
Well, golem is the same thing. It depends on how you pronounce it, but golem.
Precious. Golem, golem, potato, potato.
I think we had that a long time ago, discussion with Jason, how to pronounce that. Anyway.
I think it's golem.
It is golem.
I would have to say that it won't protect it because golems are automatons, and they're not necessarily evil. They're neutral in the way they are. So
I know where this question came from.
Where?
It came from a particular forum, and what?
I said, okay.
And I thought, since the golems are neutral, they would be affected. But if you read the description of the protection from evil spell, it does affect enchanted creatures, and it would affect a golem. It doesn't matter of alignment because they are enchanted, magical in nature.
Oh.
Well, it's... I don't know. I would think it wouldn't because they're automatons, so it doesn't really matter. They're just neutral.
Actually, in the description of the spell, when the spell is cast, acts as it were a magical armor upon the recipient. The protection encircles the recipient at a 1 foot distance, thus preventing bodily contact by creatures of an enchanted or conjured nature, such as aerial servants, demons, devils, djinn, ifrit, elementals, imps, invisible stalkers, night hags, and it goes on and on and on. Some animals or monsters are suddenly hedged from the protected creature. So it had elementals in there. I'm like, oh, elementals are neutral. Huh. They're affected.
Okay, well, I disagree with that.
Elementals are neutral, I thought.
I disagree. They are. One thing, elementals are living creatures.
True.
Elementals have intelligence. They're an actual race. So I can see why they're affected, and even though they're neutral. And now let's talk about the golem, for example. And this is just ironic, but just a day ago I was reading on Kobold Quarterly on the whole thing, history of golems and so on and so on like that. And I find it very interesting that golems are created. Now, what I'm talking about is the clay golem. That's the only one I'm talking about. I'm not talking about the flesh golem or the other ones, or the golem, the other ones. The clay golem has an interesting history where you need all four elemental types to create them.
Now, is the clay golem the one, is that from Hebrew mythology, Jewish myth?
That is correct. Yes, it is. And actually, there's more history to it than a lot of people know. Everyone's familiar with the Golem of Prague, and that's just one of them. There's also many other stories about that. I'm going to have to share that article with y'all. You're going to find it very interesting on golems. The golem is neutral, and the fact is, I don't think that the protection from evil spell will affect it.
Is it because of what Vince said, because it's an automaton?
Well, I mean, not being that it's just an automaton, the alignment is neutral for one.
Yeah.
The golems as a whole, I mean, if you take a look at them, they're magically created creatures.
Right.
Now it says here on the protection of evil that it protects you from creatures of an enchanted or conjured nature. That's not what they are. That's not what a golem is.
It's true. They are created.
It's not enchanted.
Right.
But it's not conjured either. Now, we can debate that all day on whether... Mm. Now, understand this. So let me talk to you about what the golem is. The golem is without a spirit. But the moment we're talking about the clay golem now, that in order to make it actually what it is, they do summon a spirit into it for it to actually work. So now, would that be considered a conjured creature? See where I'm coming from now?
Okay.
It's a very debatable issue here if you want to go into the whole mythology of how golems are. But per the monster manual, I say no. The protection from evil spell does not protect you from the golems, and it is not a conjured creature, nor is it an enchanted creature. Even though you need magical items to create it, it's strange. That's debatable too. Is it enchanted?
Because it has some other spirit within it. Is that?
Yeah, I'm going by the mythology of the golem and the whole thing on that. And it's just that it's hard. It just depends, I guess. Now, look at this now. Who creates the creature? If it's a lawful good person, like the one here says it's a lawful good one, or it could be an evil creature that creates a golem. There's just too many questions at hand. But honestly, I don't think that a protection from evil spell
would actually golem. This might help in our, and maybe some enlightening, because you read that very first paragraph in the monster manual under golem. It says, the creation of a golem involves ultra-powerful spells and elemental forces.
Just like I said.
Right. So does that imply that the spirit that's imbued with into the golem, is that what's being affected? Would that be?
No. Actually, what happens with the mythology of the golem, what it comes down to is in order to create a golem in Kabbalism, in Jewish mythology, you need three rabbis, and they're very specific on this. And it depends on when they're born. They have to be born in the month of air, the month of water, and the month of fire. The clay itself from the clay golem has to be of a pure kind. It's a special type of clay used. So that's where the elements come in. You all really have to read this article on the Kobold Quarterly. Wolfgang Bauer did an outstanding job of having this article in there. And I think you all would really love how they explain the whole thing on that.
I love that myth about the or the legend about the Golem of Prague. That is a really cool thing how that all came about. Anybody out there listening, if you could find out, look up either on Wikipedia or something about the Golem of Prague, it's a really cool account. An alleged account that happened, I think, in the early 1500s in Prague. About how the folks, how they created this golem, the Jewish community in Prague created this golem to help protect them.
Hmm. All right. Very debatable issue, I guess.
Yeah, I first read it on the one forum. I'm like, maybe it would be effective. Looking at the spell, now I'm like, well, they have their intelligence is nine. Well, darn it. Now what? Are they affected? I don't know. I'm going to sit on the fence on this one.
Yeah, it's kind of weird with this one, especially with the clay golem, because the clay golem appears to have no spirit, fused into it. Because if you see the part where it says that a chaotic evil spirit can go into it, I will tell you this right now. If it does get possessed by an evil spirit, the protection from evil spell will work then.
Oh, right. Yeah, definitely.
And you also had the thing with the one other, the flesh golem, it's semi-intelligent. So would that be affected, maybe? Because the flesh golem obviously is taken from the Frankenstein's monster. Basically. Fire, bad.
Yeah, well, see, this is what the issue deal with the semi-intelligent, with the intelligence, though. Like I said, it's still an automaton, I mean. But the thing is, though, this is one that can learn a little bit, whereas the clay golem cannot learn. No matter what it does, it will always act with that non-intelligence like of a child. It's hard to say that because I'm using the article that I read in the Kobold Quarterly. But still, in either way, I mean, it doesn't matter what your intelligence is. You have to meet the other criteria.
What issue was that, Will?
Oh, I have to go over there and get it. But as soon as we're done with this here, I will go over there and get it, and then I'll mention it a little later on.
Okay. All right, next email. Thank you, Gregory, and thank you for pulling it off the forums and throwing it up here. We'll see what everyone else says. Maybe they want to write in and give us their opinion about that.
I'd like to hear from our listeners on that one.
Next email comes from Dan the Man. Hey, guys, I love 1E. Yay. I was curious as to why you all use D6 initiative instead of D10. It makes it so much easier to run combat when you add in the spell times and weapon speeds. Thanks.
I use D10.
I use D6, and I just use a lower value and add all that stuff. I don't use weapon speeds. That's ridiculous. Yeah. I add the spell time onto the initiative, and that's what I use it.
Yeah, I use D6. I mean, if you think about it, each segment in a D6, based off of D6 initiative, is 10 seconds. For me, the math of how long combat is taking is a lot easier to compute using 10-second increments as opposed to 6-second increments. And it allows my players to do a little bit more with each action or each segment.
So you use a D10?
D6.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because a D6, you're taking a round and dividing it into 6 parts. So each segment is 10 seconds. But when you use a D10, each segment is only 6 seconds.
Right.
So you can... using a D6 with me, I let my players do a little bit more than I would if I were using a D10, because they have an extra 4 seconds in that segment.
Yeah, I like the way when Jason introduced me to the D6 lower, how just lower, and then you'd add the segments onto it, and that's when the magic spell will go off. So if I rolled a 1 for the party, and the magic user has 2 segments, he'd go on a 3 as opposed to the 1. That's how he invented it to me, so.
Yeah.
But you will.
I use a D10.
Boo.
Well, I use weapon speeds in the game, and that has a serious impact in the game.
I think weapon speeds is a waste of time.
I don't like using weapon speeds either.
I mean, only time I'd really use weapon speed is if hit the point where it was simultaneous, like two, like an NPC and a character are going on the same initiative roll and then attacking each other. Weapon speed is the one who hit first.
Dex, I just do whoever has the highest dex, they go first.
Or just reroll between the two of you. No big deal. All right, well, there you go. That is our reasons for what we use and what we support. And, Nick, you'd actually say why you supported the D10. You just said you used D10.
That's how Dad did it. That's how America does it. And it's worked pretty good so far.
All right.
I like using a D10 initiative. I think it's just easier for players and area and for me to track everything. I've been doing it for years. And, like I said, it's worked pretty good so far.
Surprisingly, that's the way Gary did his games, too.
Aha!
Yeah, he used a D10 later on when he, in his later years, I remember him saying that he liked the D10 better because it was easier to configure things. Yeah. I don't see how, but whatever.
Yeah, it's to each their own, you know, as long as we've always said, at least I've always said, as long as you're consistent. That's the important thing.
All right. Okay. Email number 8 coming from Rick W. Or as Nick says, W. Hi guys, I recently came across the 3 core books of 1E in my dad's old box in the basement. Cool. I was very excited to see my father played and I had no idea. I always secretly played 3.5. It's okay, we understand. And anything. Recently I told my dad of my gaming and he was happy to see I found his old book. We quickly dove into the system. You can't drive into a system. I'm an idiot.
You sure? You certainly can. I'll put a PHB right in the street here. You can drive right into it.
Yeah. We reserved that for 4th edition. We quickly dove. Matt, there's your new outtake.
Come on, Vince.
Yeah. Cut. Retake. We quickly stop laughing. We quickly dove into the system and he has been teaching me the fun of old school gaming. I can't tell you how exciting the game really is. I am actually concerned for my character dying. Ooh. Anyhow, I was doing some research about Greyhawk. Can any of you tell me about the timeline? I see various posts of people playing in 576 CY or 536 CY. What does that mean? Thanks.
Oh. I do, because I'm using Greyhawk for my campaign setting.
Go ahead.
CY stands for Common Year. Okay. And that's like the Common Year Reckoning. They date it back to the founding of the city of Greyhawk.
Okay.
And it's 570 some odd years after that. There's other timelines, I guess. Well, it's the same timeline, but there's other ways of recording the time. There's the Olven or Elf timeline for the same events, but it's obviously longer because elves are lived longer. There's like 4 or 5 different date measurements in Greyhawk that Gary Gygax used.
Really?
Yeah. If you look in the old 83 box set, I think it's in the folio that was released in 1980. There's like a whole timeline of events from the very first war against the Bakalunish and the Siluyoi's empires and the reign of colorless fire and the invoked devastation, all the way up to the I think about 10 years before the Temple of Elemental Evil,
so basically,
something like that.
over my take from listening, I never really used the CY or whatever date. I've always just said Greyhawk, whenever, blah. Mm-hmm. The CY thing is like comparing it to the Star Wars timeline. Like if you're going to play before the Clone Wars or after the Clone Wars.
Yeah, I guess you could say that. Yeah, I guess that's the way.
Well, see, they call a common year. I'm used to calling it calendar year. Being in the military, we call CY calendar year. Common year, calendar year. CY. Anyway, common year, 576, the significance of 576, that's when Gary Gygax started his campaign.
Oh, all right. Okay.
Yeah.
That's when he started his campaign. So everyone says, I'm going to start when Gary did it. Okay, how original. How about another year? You know, whatever. But that's
Started mine on 576, so there.
Well, how about being original for once?
How about you bite me?
Well, why can't you start it on 575? Why couldn't you start it at 570? Why do you have to start at 576?
Well, I don't know, because it's easier.
No, I'm just giving you a hard time.
So all the books and novels have to do with 576 going forward, pretty much?
Well, I can't say that now. I have to take a look at the books and I have to look at what's going on in that particular time period.
All right. Well, something to research then. Okay. Well, there you go. There, at least there's a starting point for this guy to, Mr. Rick W.W., to go research on. So now you're.
Oh, Vince, before you end it up, 567 CY, that's when the Beggar's War was defeated by the Thieves Guild. That's the Beggar's War.
Okay.
So I don't know the difference between that one and why they started the other one. It's one or the other. I don't know why.
And does 536 have any significance, or is it just something he must have found?
536?
Yeah.
Oh, I have to take a look at that one right here. 536?
That's what I'm looking up right now.
Yeah, I wonder if that's any significance or just...
536, I don't see anything in the timeline. 563, the Bone March falls to humanoids.
Huh, all right.
Well. I'm not seeing nothing either myself. I see 536. Bigby is born.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, I'm just looking in the original, the 83 box set.
All right. I thought there was maybe a link online we can give this guy for research purposes.
Oh, I do. Right here. You ready for it?
Yep. Yeah.
I don't know how to send it to you. Hold on. Let me copy it and put it down there for you.
All right.
Well. It looks like it's the Arcane Chronologies of Greyhawk.
Oh, okay. Cool. Well, there's some good reading for people who want to do some history on Greyhawk.
Ooh, me too.
And there goes the link, and it starts with the year. And it's strange because I just saw somewhere it said there was no negative 1500, but now I see what they're talking about, or negative. Now they're going by the SD, the CY, the SD, and the CY, and then so on and so on.
Well, that's cool. I'd be interested to take a look at that one afternoon if I was not busy. Cool. I'm always interested in the Greyhawk history. It's kind of fascinating sometimes.
Yeah.
Anyway, next email number nine.
Number nine.
From Imp Strike. I mean, he must be a Star Wars fan. Oof, that's what I'm guessing. I recently have bought Lego Heroica for my son as a tool to teach him how to get into gaming. He and I played the heck out of it, and now we've moved on to me setting it up and having him walk through it as a dungeon as I describe various sounds and things happening. I think this is working as he is quickly learning 1E rules at the young age of 9. Well, that's cool.
Awesome.
I wanted to hear your thoughts on the game and what you think about it as a teaching tool.
Lego Heroica or AD&D?
I think he means Lego Heroica, I would assume.
I don't know, but if I was 9 and my dad bought me a Lego Heroica, I would say, thank you.
I've played it at Gen Con 2010 when it first came out. That Gen Con, mm-hmm. I think. And it was very basic and very simple, and I thought it was kind of cool. And I remember saying, because my wife played it with me, we were both saying, well, this is kind of cool. And she's like, oh, if D&D's like this, maybe I can play. I go, unfortunately, it's not like this. But it's a good jumping
point. It's like the same but different.
Yeah, I like the same but different. But I could see him, if he's like building a dungeon as his kid's going along, that'd be kind of cool.
Right. I mean, I could see using it as an intro just to concepts of role-playing, not necessarily everything first edition AD&D, but just to say, this is kind of how role-playing games work. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, and then you're teaching that you're using problem solving skills. You're also using probably a little bit of math. Also, you're using storytelling skills there.
Right.
So yeah, definitely a learning tool.
Okay.
Yeah, And then I could even see at some point switching roles and letting his son actually set up the dungeon and be the one telling the story, and the dad playing along as the character, too.
There you go. There's a good learning way.
Okay, we have this other email here. It looks like it comes from Bill. Yeah, it comes
yes.
From Bill. And Bill says, I have a question about your thoughts on dual wielding with multiple attacks and hurled weapons. And here are the questions, and we'll do it one at a time. It says here, do you allow dual wielding to double the number of attacks or to add only one attack? And he has here, would dual wielding character who has two attacks a round have four attacks each round or just three? So I will start with myself. Okay, do you allow dual wielding to double the number of attacks? No. Or do you add only one attack? You only add one attack. Anytime, and now we're going by the first edition rules, which is covered on page 70 for attacks with two weapons. Okay? Your weapon in your offhand is only one attack, and it'll always be one attack. Right. And he says here, would a dual-wielding character who has two attacks around have four attacks each round or just three? You will just have three. How do you all feel about that?
That's by the book. That's correct.
Yeah, I just want to make sure that you do not get extra attacks with your offhand.
No, it's always been one, like the book says.
And that's going to cover mostly the answers to the rest of the questions. So if anyone has anything else, his second question is: Do you allow dual wielding hurled weapons so that you can throw darts with both hands and get six attacks per round? No. How about you, Matt? What would you do?
I could make an argument for letting them throw, but if you're throwing darts with the minus four to each dart, go for it. What at best, if you get really, really lucky, you're doing 9 points of damage. More likely, you're maybe doing one and wasting a bunch of darts. So I wouldn't necessarily have a problem with it since they're not going to hit anyway. And if they feel good throwing a bunch of darts with their offhand and have them go wobbling everywhere, go for it.
The dart is like, what, D3 anyway?
Yeah, it's a D3. So at best, if you hit with all of them in your offhand, you're doing 9 points of damage. So
I would allow it with a high dexterity.
That's interesting.
Because I think you'd have to have a good dexterity, a good balance on yourself to be able to throw double darts like that precisely.
Well, there's a difference between precisely and just throwing them. I'm envisioning these just kind of being thrown as well as you can throw anything in your offhand. In other words, not very well.
Right. I'm with you on this one, Matt. I mean, they want to go for it. Yeah, but you're minus four for each dart in that offhand. Minus two in your regular hand, too, by the way.
Right. So you're not going to be hitting, and if you do, you're not doing much damage. So it's not like letting them do it's going to break the game all that much because you're still not – you're doing 1d3. Per dart that hits.
The small to medium, I think for large, it's 1 to 2.
Yeah. Right. So
the actual damage goes down if you're like attacking something larger.
You would probably be better grabbing a handful of rocks and throwing them. Throw your darts multi-handed.
Yeah, a dart for a large creature is 1 to 2 points of damage. So,
well, I'll tell you right now. You can throw three with your main hand, but with your offhand, you're throwing one. That's it. I'm strict. You ain't throwing those six darts. That ain't happening. Now, ain't there a magical weapon that you could throw and if multiple darts come out of it?
It's like, what is it called?
Quail's Feather Token?
No, it's one like the Hornet's Nest or something like
that. Oh, that's right. Now, see, there might be an exception with that. Might be. But until that time comes, when it'll never happen, I won't even worry about it. But as far as I'm concerned, three darts with your main hand and one dart with your offhand. So I guess I'm the only one that's different.
Okay.
But no, they still take all the associated penalties with it too as well now. Don't get me wrong now. Yeah. Let's see. Question number three. How about throwing darts with the offhand and attacking with a melee with the right hand? Let's see, throwing darts with the offhand and attacking with a melee with the right hand. That's a weird question now, because it depends on which one I guess the left hand must be the offhand. Oh, only one dart, my friend. I don't care.
Right. Yeah.
So what you do is you're throwing a dart, moving up, and then attacking. I don't know if you could do all that.
Right.
I allow maybe some movement, but not like that.
throwing darts with the offhand attack. No, I have a problem with that because a dart is only, what, 1, 2, 3 for range?
Yeah.
So there's no reason why he can't throw a dart and attack with a melee weapon. I mean, like I said, you have 6 seconds of combat right there. Throwing a dart is nothing. This is a little small old dart. Again, it's still going to take the associate penalties, though.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Now, here's the fun part. What about strength bonuses to damage? What strength bonuses to damage do you allow? Now, I'm taking that. I don't know whether he's talking about throwing darts or with, you know, melee weapons.
Well, I think he's referring to the darts.
Okay, well, you want me to answer that one, too?
You betcha.
Okay. Straight up, the answer is no. However, states on page 63. Man, I found that thing and I lost my page there. Okay, here it is, missile discharge, page 64. If you take a look up there, it says grenade-like missiles and special to hit bonuses that say strength bonus considerations. Strength bonuses do not apply to missile weapons or hurled weapons. However, if a DM rules otherwise, if the DM says you can have it, yes, you can. So per the book rule, the answer is no. You will not get strength bonuses if you throw darts. However, a DM could adjudicate otherwise if they were like some type of special dart or whatever.
Don't composite bows allow you to add strength into the attack damage?
That's out of second edition.
Oh,
Second edition.
I was thinking composite. Sorry.
We're going to have to send you the Thacko's hammer.
Oh. Yeah, you're going to get hurt there. Look what happened to Matt.
Yeah. No, that's when I went basic.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I went basic and I got crippled. So, yeah.
Matt, well, you saved, though, and you didn't die.
Yes, I did save.
So. See, that's the worst that doesn't happen. If you send Vince over there, he will be convinced that a castle is a mansion.
Oh, here we go. Taking pot shots at the podcast, huh?
Hey, we got to have some fun now.
Yeah. All right, so thank you, Bill.
Yes, thank you, Bill, from Will.
Will Bill.
Kill Bill?
Kill Bill, even better. No, Bill,
I hate
kill
that stupid commercial on TV with that cell phone. Woo-hoo, woo-hoo, woo-hoo. I hate that.
All right, don't do it again.
Yeah, okay. For the next email, who's taking that one?
All right, our next email says, Dear Vince, Nick, Matt, and Will, first off, want to thank you. You're welcome. I landed on your podcast about a month ago. Ow.
Oh, yeah.
During a pretty depressing time.
Oh.
I was feeling terribly uninspired creatively. I couldn't draw, couldn't write, and the interest that I'd enjoyed all my life, most notably RPGs and comic books, seemed to be changing in ways that seemed at odds with their original themes and intent. Mm-hmm. Preach on, brother. I know what you're talking about.
I hear him.
I tried not to see myself as an obstinate curmudgeon. Wow. Obstinate curmudgeon. We use the word grognard, but yeah, that'll work too. Having been a dungeon master since 83 at age 14, I have always kept my hand in, so to speak, but the fact remains that new materials don't seem to encourage creative expression or invention. Yeah, that can be. Yeah, it's kind of hard, like, sifting the, you know, I would say the wheat from the chaff, I suppose.
The crap from the good stuff.
Or that too. Finding your podcast introduced a field of possibility I really didn't know existed. As a result, I'm back to writing and drawing, and I sincerely appreciate what you're doing to keeping the heart of advanced Dungeons and Dragons alive, as well as the inspiration I'm sure the podcast had given to a new generation of role players who are perhaps just beginning to realize their own imaginative capabilities. Mm-hmm. I'm just slightly behind on the podcast at the moment, as I've been trying to listen to all of them in order. 6 more to go. This is getting to be a long email, but hey, I'm a 44-year-old guy with no group at the moment, so when I get a chance to talk about my favorite subject, I go for it. Don't get me wrong, my wife is My wife patiently indulges my rants on the perils of D20. My cat wisely doesn't interrupt when I attempt to calculate the hit points or my irritating neighbors.
Yikes.
And dude, if I have to listen to my teenage daughters talk about boys and nail polish, they're going to have to hear my thoughts on ghoul attack preparedness training. They're in high school. It could come in handy. Dude, you sound like you're reading a page out of my life here right now. This is like crazy. It's like, did you peer in my window or something and write this down? Maybe it's like, I know how you're feeling. I do have a group, though. So I'm going to have a gaming group. So
way to rub it in, Nick.
Yeah,
make
him feel terrible.
But you know what? There are ways. If you look online, I mean, there are like forums where you can hook up with other players, maybe in your area, or play online. You know,
we got a community game he could join if he wants to on Skype.
Yeah, join on Skype, or I think Google Plus has their thing. And
Do you know where he lives? This guy lives at. He lives in I Am Alone Town. It has a population of 5. That's concluding his family.
Oh, no. Right, okay. Back to my point, as it says in the email. The recent podcast about resurrection and reincarnation reminded me of a player I once had whose character tended to die a lot. Seriously, it wasn't my fault. I'm not that kind of DM.
Yeah. Sure you are.
But you can only save a guy so much. And this guy, I don't want to say his name, but I will tell you that it rhymes exactly with Carl. Good job.
That's messed up.
I was about ready to give up after he lost his 10th character in a 2-month span of playing. Wow. Yeah, I would want to give up too. Rather than lose a player, I create a class for him based upon the abundance of self-styled mediums of the 1980s. Maybe you'll remember those. Oh, like out of Poltergeist, I guess?
Yeah.
Anyway, I can't recall how he executed things like hit points, levels, abilities, etc. I remember that we called the class Channeler. On occasion, the character who was only a marginally competent fighter was able to channel the spirits of deceased characters for brief periods, maybe 1 to 6 turns. He retained his appearance, but in other respects, acquired not only the abilities of the spirits, including 2 magic users and a thief, but their personalities as well. This is awesome. It's so great. It led me to some interesting role-playing. If I ever found my notes on it, I'll share with the... Oh, please do.
Yeah.
I want to see this. Or if anyone desperate enough to hook for a hook wants to give... For a hook wants to give it a whirl, maybe they'll have ideas of their own. Thanks for everything, you guys. Keep the podcast coming. And that was from... Dungeon Tunist Jeff, that made my whole day.
I want to see some of his drawings too. Jeff, send
me. Yeah. If you're listening to Dungeon Tunist Jeff, I'd like to see some of your stuff. Maybe we'll, with your permission, we'll put it out there. Who knows?
Yeah, we could use a new logo banner on the website.
Yeah. I'm interested in this Chandler class. That's great. Yeah.
And I have to surmise that the things he kept channeling were his past dead 10 characters.
Yes.
That's awesome. That's too funny.
Why am I thinking out of the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy when the bowl of petunias, when it fell, it said, oh no, not again.
Yeah.
You know, it'd be kind of cool. Actually, I was thinking about this channel class. Every like encounter, or every battle, the player rolls a D6, and that's what class he channels for that battle.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's not as precise as to what he can actually channel. He just kind of opens himself up and says, "Someone, please come in
and help me." And you roll the D6, and whatever you decide the 6 classes are, and that's one he gets to play for that battle. Right. And then he collapses into the battle. What happened?
And you could even do the, if you try to channel in like the wrong area, like a evil graveyard or something, something else could come in with instead.
Like a demon or a devil.
Yeah.
Okay. I think we have one email left, and go ahead, Matt.
Yes, we have one last email from GM Varger. Greetings, Roll for Initiative hosts. First, a word of thanks. I first started listening to your sister podcast, Save or Die and Thacko's Hammer, and was in a Labyrinth Lord / Basic D&D trend at the time. Then I found out there some of the hosts of those shows also did a podcast dedicated to first edition AD&D. Yeah, we were here first.
Imagine that.
Yeah. But it was listening to Roll for Initiative that inspired me to check out Osric, and thanks to that, I am now playing in several AD&D play-by-post and running one of my own using the classic TSR module UK5 Eye of the Serpent.
Ooh.
Yeah. Cool.
One of the UK ones. Awesome.
The first edition of the advanced game has become my favorite version, and I only lament not having become acquainted with it earlier. Everything seems to click into place. The balance between options and simplicity is ideal for me, as is the malleability of the system. As an added bonus, the folks I'm playing with online, AD&D first edition and second edition gamers, seem to not only be ahead above the chaff compared to what I have come to expect from PBPs, they are also easy to find and entice to join a game. At first, being afraid of not acquiring sufficient players to run the module, I ended up having to make a waiting list. Since then, I have been having fun as a player and getting good praise and commentary from my own players. So thank you again for being the catalyst that got me back into fantasy medieval role-playing. Yeah, that's great. I mean, you'll find that there's a lot of people out there looking to play. So, yeah.
You know, and I think it also contributes to the renaissance of the older editions, because as a lot of us get older and we want to, you know, we want to get back to some of our older, our pastimes, but we can't find players. It's the perfect way to find players for you.
Oh, yeah. The internet has been just a boon for linking players of older game systems together and keeping the games alive when they would otherwise be dead.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And now there's more. Now ready yourselves. He's like, I rate you a 4 out of 5 stars with a downward trend that could lead to 3.5.
No!
But he's like, do not gasp. I shall explain.
Yeah. You already did. Sorry.
You should have waited. The show could use a divergent voice, a good devil's advocate, if you will, a host that will counter the pre-assumptions of the current ones and make debate on AD&D issues not limited to an artificially small field. In my perception, the disagreements between the hosts are minute compared to grander issues and a wide frame of opinions that inflame the AD&D forums and threads throughout the interwebs. Oftentimes, I wish there could be, I wish I could be there to interject a "what about X, Y, or Z?" to introduce something to the debate that apparently hasn't even crossed the host's minds, as they usually are in the same wave, so to speak. Well, you're more than welcome to email us on anything we talk about. If you feel we missed something, please write in and we'll discuss it on the show. So, so you can be that divergent voice. It just so happens we all have similar play styles, so we agree on a lot of stuff.
Oh, we do disagree on some things, like just what we talked about previously here.
Clerics
on
with blunt weapons?
Yes.
Yes.
Orcs with pig heads?
Pigs with orc heads.
Yeah. So, I mean, we do have our we do agree more than we disagree, but that's what the listeners are for. Is if you think we missed something, tell us, write us, and we'll talk about it on the show.
You betcha. Yeah.
Right.
No. Yeah. We disagree.
Yeah, we disagree. Now give me your address again so I can drive over there and see you. Yeah. Then we'll talk about it.
Yes, this isn't the McLaughlin group where at the end Vince will be like, wrong, the correct way to play first edition is using method 3 of character creation and only using the core books. Yes. Next topic.
Issue number 3, Pat Buchanan.
Okay. On more than one occasion, now that I've listened to a fair number of episodes, I could predict with accuracy what a host take on a given manner would be before listening to it. And even knew beforehand that unorthodox takes on the issues would not even be considered. Sometimes listening to a feature feels like donning an old show, like reading a 20-year-old gaming magazine article. And like the latter, it tends to be inconclusive and bring a little novelty. Well, we do have almost 100 shows under our belt, so if we've actually done our job in expressing our views, you should kind of actually be able to predict what we will say on given topics, because we've talked about so many different things. If we were all of a sudden to start developing crazy harebrained opinions and things just to be devil's advocate, it'd come across really unauthentic, and it wouldn't be us, and I think it would make for a poor show if we weren't being real as opposed to like trying, well, I need to take the obstinate view on this just so we have the obstinate view. If you don't have the passion, if you don't believe in it, you're not actually going to be able to make a coherent argument for it. And it's not going to be a fun show if people aren't actually passionate about what they're talking about.
True, true. And you know, just, you know, we're gamers. We're not hip and trendy. So
right,
but we don't do what the hip and trendy thing is.
Right. But again, if you feel we're missing something, please write in. Tell us. Give us that divergent view that you think we're lacking. We want to hear other people's opinions. We want to know what our listeners think of what we talk about.
Your best tool is a voicemail.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. We will be more than willing to play it on a show. We're not coming from high atop the mountain with tablets written in stone and this is how you have to play our game. If anything, I think we would have taught you the first edition rule books are guidelines. They are not written in stone.
The fact that we're reading this email should show something.
Right.
They are written in granite and marble.
Well, unfortunately, I'm unable to lift anything more than 5 pounds at the moment, so they're guidelines.
So okay. I guess you're not going to be carrying around that 1,000-page dungeon book, huh?
No. I actually did, however, weigh the 5th edition hero system rules. I can actually pick them up 3.8 ounces, or 3.8 pounds.
I don't think you're picking up the 6th edition, I'll tell you that.
Oh, no. No, 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 no.
Anyway,
back to the email. There's just a little bit more. As for the downward trend lately, there has been a worrying trend of spending entire episodes talking about other games. Mentioning other systems is fine by me, but dedicating whole episodes to Dragon's Quest or Talislantia, when there are so few first edition AD&D podcasts here around, seems like a waste of recording time.
I want to talk about that one.
Okay.
A lot of people wrote into us and on the forums as a proof that they wanted to hear what was out at the time and compare it versus D&D or AD&D, I should say, excuse me. And that's what we did. Every topic that we compared it versus first edition. So it's not like we weren't talking about the love here. We were just showing what was out during the time and what the options were for people to play. And we will continue to do that because people like hearing that.
Right.
It's unfortunate that you do not like it. I'm sorry.
Right. But at least with us, we do title our shows. And if you see one that's like a game system you're not interested in, you don't have to listen. Something right. about podcasts I've never fully understand is, one, people feeling the need to listen to everything sequentially when it's not something that necessarily needs to be done. Or now like catching up with like news podcasts. They'll be like 3 weeks behind on a news podcast. And email the host and say, we're 3 weeks behind on a news podcast. It's current events, people. It's 3 weeks old by the time you listen to it. What are you doing? But there's something about podcasts. People like listening in order and feel they have to listen to every episode. But no, pick and choose it. If there's a topic you're not interested in, it doesn't hurt our feelings if you don't listen. We want to entertain you, and if we're not doing that, skip the episode.
Yeah. There's plenty of podcasts that I've downloaded, like Matt said, in a row and gone, I don't like this. Fast forward. Let me go on to the next episode. I'm not really missing anything here.
Right. Yeah. It's just.
Yeah, you're not going to hurt our feelings.
Right. So what, maybe you might miss a little quip or a little thing by like Nick or by Will saying orcs with whatever, pig heads with faces.
Pigs with orc heads.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, you might miss that joke, but who cares?
Right.
Well, you know, get to the chopper. There you go.
Right. Which actually...
You took my father's sword!
You took my father's sword!
Oh. And down to just to close out this email... Where you'll find no negative criticism from my part is the entertainment value of the podcast. 5 solid glowing golden stars on that subcategory. In fact, if you're willing to do it, it would beseech you to bring back that Arnold jokes and get to the chopper. Well, we just did.
Just did.
Once in a while. Those are the most hilarious things I have heard on a gaming podcast. My all-time favorite episode was number 65, Barbarians. I found myself listening to selected portions of it over and over again and laughing until tears were forming in my eyes. The Kinder Barbarians bit still cracks me up to this day. So keep up the work, maintain the strength of the show, and hope you improve on the not-so-excellent parts. Either way, I'll keep on listening in friendship, GM Varger. Yeah, we thank you for your feedback. I mean, we really do appreciate everything, both positive and negative. And, hopefully now you understand why we were dipping our toes into things that weren't necessarily first edition AD&D, but just the more of the gaming scene at the time. And And we're glad you and enjoy our show.
I guess he's going to freak out when he sees the episode of, entitled FOSSA Star Trek.
No, really.
Think I'm kidding, huh? Yeah. Anyway.
Oh, I thought it was FOSSA Battletech.
Well, FOSSA did Battletech as well.
Yeah.
Yes, it did.
Or Shatter. No, this will be Shatterrun.
No, FOSSA Star Trek, just to annoy him.
Okay. Yeah. No. I didn't want to do the unicorn or Pegasus Star Trek.
Fatal. Fatal.
Oh, you might as well do Amber then. By the way, which one of y'all are Star Wars fans?
Me.
You know Chewbacca was killed?
Yes. R.A. Salvatore dropped a moon on him.
I just wanted to see that because I read a review, and as a matter of fact, since we're bringing this up, that article of that Cobalt Quarterly on the Golem, the Legends of the Golem, that was winter of 2008-09, issue number 8. There's a dragon on front with this woman carrying a rifle or something. I don't know what it is. But there's an interview in there with R.A. Salvatore, and he was talking about how he received death threats and hate mail when he killed Chewbacca.
Yeah, there was a lot of hate for that. A lot. I mean, a lot.
Well, there was a lot of hate for just the Yuuzhan and Vong in general.
Yeah.
Well,
not as much as killing Chewbacca.
Yeah.
But there's more hate just directed at George Lucas.
Not really.
No, that's Jar Jar.
No, explain Howard the Duck movie.
Oh, I hate that movie.
Or the Star Wars Holiday Special.
B. Arthur, Star Wars Holiday Special. That makes it win.
Harvey Corp.
There was a joke. There was a spoof online. I was thinking it was an Indiana Jones spoof. And they were spoofing on how George Lucas was recreating another movie and how he was calling him Han Solo in the movie. And he's like, if you don't don the Han outfit, I'll put you in the next Christmas special. So that was a cute little joke there.
Yeah, you got to watch the documentary, The People versus George Lucas. It's great.
Is it like The People versus Larry Flint? Or
yeah, but it's not as stupid.
Hey. That was a good movie.
I know. I'm just busting your chops.
So that ends the very long email episode, I guess, because I am out of emails and out of voicemails. And
I'm out of time.
No, I'm not out of time. I can continue talking for about hours if I wanted to. Ha!
Well, I gotta go get some Iron Match. I'm hungry. Oh. Warrior needs food badly. Doo-doo.
Warrior is about to die.
Oh.
Elf needs food.
The food. What was the name of that game again?
Gauntlet.
That was what it was.
Doi.
Oh, I haven't played that in years.
Yeah, so get to the chopper. There.
Yeah, how the world can you eat an apple and it gives you 500 health? What kind of apple is that?
That's heck of an apple.
I don't know. Ask Eve.
Ooh.
She never ate an apple. They just said fruit. It could have been grapes.
Good point. That's true.
It's always been symbolized as an apple from the tree, so. Blech.
All you need to do is get to the chopper now. Come on, get down.
Oh, I just saw his great movie this week, Commando. I love it. I want to see his new one. Did you see his new one yet?
What's it called?
Expendables 2?
No, he's in this one with the sheriff. He's a sheriff of a town.
Really?
Yeah, he did the Expendables 2, and then he did another one not too long after. I want to go see it.
Okay. I want him to do like a Kindergarten Cop again. Not the Duma.
It's not the Duma.
Yeah, that was awesome. I like that.
Are you eating all these lunches? Stop it.
Oh, yeah, that was funny. That was hilarious. Stop it!
Arnold, we love you, man.
Drops the kid.
Mm-hmm. Actually, there's a whole podcast, I think, Flagons and Dragons, that has the whole Conan, Arnold Schwarzenegger as their logo.
Nice.
Yeah. It always made me laugh whenever I saw it.
Yeah, that's good.
So anyway, anything else you guys want to discuss, or we're going
to
get out?
I was trying to think if there was anything else I wanted to discuss, but I guess not. Oh, the D&D contest.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. People have been having questions and everything about, you know, some of the criteria and everything. Again, remember, this is a first edition advanced Dungeons & Dragons contest. That means no Osric. That's not D&D. So I just want to make that clear. And then it has to have a Halloween theme.
Halloween theme, okay.
Yeah, Halloween theme. Something scary.
Something scary, something creepy.
Yeah, something creepy, something scary. Something like that.
All right, cool. Well, and then it could be either a dungeon crawl or a castle, whatever they want, because I know someone asked that.
Right. And what was the intent for all the adventures that are submitted to us? What was going to do with them?
Oh, and for the naysayers out there thinking, oh, they're giving it up and RFI is going to publish them and make money off them. No.
No, we're not.
Saying that was that we're going to collect them and they become our property to send out to the community as a free PDF. The winner will be highlighted on our website as a free download for everybody to peruse through. And the rest of them will be put in a big giant PDF, which we'll give to our supporters. So
for free. We're not going to make any profit off of it because we're that kind of people.
Yeah. Well, I just don't know where that ridiculous concept came up that we was going to keep it and then do something monetary. That was absolutely ludicrous.
Yeah,
no sense in that mess.
It was mostly said by one moron that I won't say his name.
That's awesome.
Positive moron that lives here in Texas, so he'll be getting his. So,
well, let me tell you what I did get though. You know, Doc Mindwipe from the forum.
Oh yeah, great guy. Yep.
He's good. He's good people. I like him. What he wanted, his recommendation was, how about some honorable mentions of the runner-up, something like the three best non-winners. No need to mention any names, or anything, just the general tone and application, the encounters, and the storylines, and all that and everything. He just he wanted, you know, to make sure that the people that submitted this stuff will get more mention. And I said, I promise you that everyone that submits something, one way or another, will be recognized, identified, or it will be on the website for everyone to use.
Well, we could definitely put in the PDF that we compile. We can put the module down and put it in parentheses, winner, runner-up, or first or something
absolutely.
Like that.
Absolutely. Yeah, that sounds like a good idea.
Like, you know, the silver, the bronze, or whatever, just so people could see who actually we considered in the top three.
Which, by the way, is a free PDF.
Yeah, free.
Yeah.
We had to do a shout-out to our secret DM friend out there, though.
Yes, he is also running. Is his contest over or not?
His contest is over, and this is what was shocking to me. The thing was he only got 12 submissions.
Oh, that's a shame.
And that to me is extremely sad to me because I figure I'm going to take our site out of the picture. We're talking about two other sites where there's lots of first edition so-and-so players and everything. 12 people only? Sad.
Wow. That's because no one wants to work for it. I mean, they just think, you know, give it to me for free.
Well, the contest, that's what they're getting books for free. I mean, all they had to do was 15 to 20 rooms. They don't even have to do it the criteria was 15 to 20 rooms, and it didn't have to be in a dungeon format or anything like that because they're going to, now with their material, they plan on doing something with it. I didn't go into the whole hubbub about it and everything, but in any case, what they're planning for it is just as good, and I think it's a great idea. Mm. But again, three books. I mean, I think it's a great opportunity to get out there and, you know, promote it, but, you know, 12 people? I'm sorry.
And last question was there level limits? I said no, but then you stepped in and said there was.
Yeah, I didn't want anything with no level 27 or 30 because now we're getting something that, you know, I might as well just go to a comic book store. I should have said that earlier by the way. I don't want nothing high. I think what I said, 8 to 10 was the highest.
I think you wrote that, yeah.
Yeah, because most people, when they play games, they're going to be between 1 and 10. Usually 1 to 3, 4 to 7, and 8 to 10. I think 8 to 10 was the last one. I say keep it there so people could actually use the stuff. If you make something for 18th level characters, people are not going to get to 18th. It just doesn't, I don't know.
Right, yeah, just think of the modules that were actually published by TSR and what their level ranges were. Use one of those. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, use as a good guideline, absolutely.
I don't think they made the modules that high except for that Bloodstone one.
Right.
The 100.
Yeah.
Right, there was the one. So, at that point... Yeah.
I know Mensur did a bunch of them that were high level, but there was so far and few between, so...
Yeah.
Anyway. I guess we gotta get going because I hear Nick's stomach growling.
That's mine.
Oh, that's yours, I'm sorry. Anyway, we'll step out and say keep it original, keep it old school, and thank you for all the emails and the lovely voicemails and all the support. Thank you very much. Good night.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Roll for initiative.